help out in the event that we need to administer CPR or if anyone needs any first aid. And in the event of an earthquake, the people up here will duck, cover, and hold. If you're out in the audience, please just hold your seat, wait until the quaking subsides, and then we will exit. And as you know, there are the exits for Monterey Street and also exits to Hybera Street. So hopefully we can all have a very safe and productive meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. I would like to introduce John Frank. John is the Vice President in charge of power generation and the decommissioning process for PG&E, and he has some welcoming remarks.
Yeah. Thank you, Chuck. A nuclear plant benefits and depends on a strong relationship with its community. And to that end, as we move Diablo Canyon towards the end of its service as a generating station, there's really two focus areas for us. First, we're going to operate the facility with safety of the public in mind at all times. That's central to everything we do in nuclear power. The second focus really is to prepare for the decommissioning in light of the needs of the all the stakeholders involved. And tonight I want to thank the panel and I thank the engagement from the community, those members of the communities that are here tonight, because this is the first in a long step of process for that second focus area associated with preparing the station and doing the planning work and the community, quite frankly, for the inevitable decommissioning of Diablo Canyon. In order to create this panel, we offered this to the California Public Utilities Commission as an element of the hearings and the joint proposal agreement that proposed the manner in which the plant would shut down. This was something that the company desired, and we believe that it is very important to engage the community in a very transparent, robust, and collaborative conversation about how the plant will be shut down. This forum here is really a two-way communication, both for us to communicate to the community, but most importantly and vital is to get input from the community on how we move forward with the activities that we know will affect our neighbors as we move forward. We had over 100 people apply for positions on the panel. So, we want to thank everyone who applied. We were really very fortunate to have a really tremendous interest in the community and in involvement, and I want to thank the panel because I know this is not a minimal amount of time that will be invested. We're very proud of the panel. We think we have a very diverse set of opinions and insights and thoughts. In a few minutes, I think we're going to get each panel member to kind of speak a little to their backgrounds, and I think after those introductions, you'll realize that we really did reach out to people who have a diverse opinions and thoughts relative to everything from nuclear power itself, from government, the environment, business, all the different factors that are going to be important to consider in the work we're going to be going forward. I want to emphasize a couple of things. This is a multi-billion-dollar project that we'll be moving through, and more importantly, it's a multi-decade process. There's going to be a lot of interest in the community and interest in the panel to work through a large number of very critical decisions, like how the spent fuel will be stored, what will happen with the lands that the plant is currently existing on, how the decommissioning will affect the community. And to that end, I want to emphasize that the plant's going to continue to operate until 2025. And then the actual decommissioning work will continue for many years afterwards, and we're going to cover that in a little bit here. So if you don't get a chance to talk about or hear about an issue tonight, we are going to talk about where future agenda items will be placed on the calendar. So there's, I believe right now we've counted at least 30 opportunities in the current schedule between now and plant shutdown in order to engage with the community in this panel. So there's going to be a lot of opportunities. Most importantly, I want to thank Chuck Anders. Chuck is our facilitator. He brings 30 years of facilitation of this type of a program with his background and lives in the community. So we feel very fortunate to have him. This is not going to be a PG&E-led format, but really that's why we have Chuck. It's not a company format. It is a community format, and as such, consider him your facilitator. With that, turn over to Chuck.
Thank you very much, John. Just want to go over a couple of items on the agenda. First of all, I want to let everybody know that this meeting is being live streamed right now, so people can be watching it on the internet and I believe on cable TV. And we also have transcription. Our stenographer is here, Melissa Ploy. Thank you for being with us tonight and helping us out. And we also have sign interpreters. Two people, Robin Babb and Julia Townsend, are providing sign interpretation for us for any hearing impaired persons. I also want to advise everyone we are going to have an opportunity for public comment. If anybody wants to provide public comment, please fill out a card like this. This is what we're going to use to ask people to come up and speak. Indicate your name, the date, the residence, and describe your remarks. And we will collect these. Right over here. You can have mine.
Well, thank you very much.
And we will collect those. We will cut off the submission of cards at 7:30. So make sure if you intend to speak and would like to speak that you fill out a card for us. I do want to recognize that we have multiple pathways for participation. And as Mr. Frank said, this is a long-term process. The panel is going to be working on these issues for a long time, and there's going to be multiple meetings and multiple workshops on specific topics as we move forward. And one of the things tonight is to talk about the schedule of those topics. And just to go over them very quickly, we've got public meetings. We'll probably have public workshops dedicated to specific topics and activities. We have public comment meetings. We have a kiosk. I don't know if you saw it in the poster room where you could actually just fill out on the computer comments and questions. Those can be submitted anytime. You can go on the panel website and log in and submit questions. And the panel will receive those questions. Email the panel. And you know, my personal favorite is create a relationship with one of the panel members that has similar perspectives and concerns that you do. This panel is very diverse, as you'll find out, and I think you'll relate, someone will relate to one of the people on this panel. So with that, I would like to move forward and let's find out a little more about the panel, and I've asked each of the panel members to spend a minute or two just introducing themselves and talking about why they wanted to be on the panel and what their issues were. So you didn't know this, Lauren, but I'm going to start with you.
All right. Thank you, Chuck. My name is Lauren Brown. I live in San Luis Obispo. We've been here since 1974. Briefly, my primary areas of interest that motivated me to apply for this panel. Probably first is open space. It's an area that I've been involved in a number of ways over the years. And the second is probably the economic impact, concern about the very significant impact that's going to occur to our community when Diablo shuts down. But also interested, are there any ways that we can leverage the enormous infrastructure investment that has been made by PG&E? Thanks.
Go ahead, Kara.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for coming. My name is Kara Woodruff, and I'm an attorney and a financial planner here in San Luis Obispo. I came up with five goals for being a participant on this engagement panel, but in the interest of time, I thought I would just go over two of them. The goals are process, safety, recreation, environmental, and economic. But for me, the heart of my engagement is really process and recreation. So when it comes to process, I'm hoping that to ensure that the decommissioning process is fair, honest, and open, and that the public is given every opportunity to engage and be heard, and that the public voice is incorporated into the decisions of not only the utility, but also the regulators. And I think the thing that probably brought me to the panel more than anything is environmental conservation and recreation. And so I hope to ensure the conservation of and public access to all of the 12,000 acres of Diablo Canyon lands, including Wild Cherry Canyon, but excluding those parcels that are necessarily off limits to the public because of safety issues. On the process point, I'm part of a group of people that manage a Facebook page called Central Coast Conservation / Friends of Wild Cherry Canyon. I promise that everything I can post on that Facebook site about this process, I will. So if you're a Facebook user and you want to stay informed, please don't hesitate to go online and check out that page because I will keep it very, very current. Also, if anybody wants to reach out to me personally, my email address is kara@blakesley-blakesley.com, and I encourage any and all comments at any time to that email address. Thank you.
David? Good evening. My name is David Baldwin. I'm a lifelong resident of the county. I'm a former worker at Diablo Canyon, where I served a good portion of my apprenticeship there in the 1980s, learning a skilled trade. Since that time, I've been a representative of construction workers in one way or another for the past 20-plus years, and I now work in public works compliance. As a lifelong resident of the county, you know, that was certainly my first reason for wanting to be on the panel. I care about this area deeply. I love the beautiful Central Coast here, and I want to be sure that we have it here to enjoy for many years to come. But as a construction industry guy, I wanted to be sure that the mitigation of job loss and the issues surrounding workers at Diablo Canyon are properly vetted and discussed, and that workers have a voice in the process, especially when it comes to job loss and protecting the community as a whole. The skilled craft at Diablo represent a highly skilled and trained local workforce that is a real gem here that we have on the coast. And that means that they not only produce a quality product, but they produce the safest product in the most expeditious way. And I want to be sure that that continues through decommissioning. Also, the dollars that flow from discretionary income from workers are vital to the overall health of the community. You know, they say healthy discretionary dollars and you have a healthy community. And I want to be sure that our local workforce actually has a voice here in this process as PG&E moves through decommissioning. And I look forward to the process. And I, too, am available for anyone that would like to ask questions or make comments. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Frank Meacham. I live in Paso Robles. I've been a fifth-generation member of San Luis Obispo County, nine generations of California, and at any moment, I should be a great-grandfather, so I will have 13 generations of Californians. Obviously, California is important to me. The past is I've always been interested in the past, but I'm very interested in the future. And I'm, to make it clear, the decisions that I try to make are not for me, but for the generations to come. And I think that that's what we're going to be doing now as a panel and with the community, is trying to make a determination what's best for the future generations. It's not going to be for us. This is a long process, and we hopefully we're going to be doing the right thing. I have no specific agenda in terms of an interest of any kind. My background is such of a, I was 20 years as an electrical contractor, 7 years a financial advisor. I've been a planning commissioner, city council member, a mayor, and a county supervisor. That's it. Thank you.
Good evening. My name's Alex Carlin, and my background is that I spent 40-plus years as a federal environmental attorney, primarily in Washington, D.C., started out as an enforcement lawyer at EPA headquarters, did environmental law for many, many years, and then moved into a nuclear area about 20 years ago with a company that did the cleanup of nuclear and radioactive waste sites, as well as the decommissioning of nuclear power plants. So I thought that would be a relevant and helpful background to bring to this committee or panel. But the last 11 years I spent in Washington, D.C. with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission as an administrative law judge, deciding cases in which companies sought the relicensing of their nuclear power plants or other amendments. I handled the Vermont Yankee case, which has now represented a closure. I handled the Diablo Canyon license renewal case here in San Luis Obispo County from 2010 to 2015. I also handled the Yucca Mountain litigation, adjudicating that issue from 2004 to about 2009. I hope to bring some of that understanding and knowledge to this panel. I'm not a lawyer for the PG&E. I'm not a lawyer for anyone else. But I do have that background, and I thought it would be helpful. My wife and I live here in San Luis Obispo City, and we've been coming here for 20 years. In about 2003, seems like a long time ago to me, we bought some property in Los Osos, and because of something called the sewer moratorium, we still have a piece of property down in Los Osos. But we love this community, and we're glad to be here.
Thank you.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Sherry Danoff, an Avila area resident of 18 years. My background professionally is land use planning, which I did in various places for many years. My particular interests, reasons for wanting to serve on this committee, relate to safe storage of nuclear fuel, spent fuel, and also the potential for transport and wanting it to be safe of radioactive materials through Little Avila with its very constrained access. And then second major interest is future uses of the land surrounding Diablo, the facility, and particularly related to the effect it would have on Avila and, again, on access, its limited access road. And I'm interested in all aspects of it as well. So thank you.
So thank you for coming this evening. My name is Trevor Keith. I am a 21-year resident of the city of San Luis Obispo. My role is in the administrative office here at the County of San Luis Obispo. Why the interest of the panel is really to understand and be a part of the process of the safety of the community as kind of things ramp down out at the plant. And then also kind of the local effects, what those will be, including kind of the economic impacts, again, as kind of things wind down. Those are kind of my two primary. Again, love the area and want to make sure that we make good decisions through this process. So thank you for having me.
Good evening. My name is Dina Bellman. I'm a resident of rural Rio Grande. I work in Oceano and Pismo Beach. I was born and raised in San Luis Obispo County. My background is in project management, strategic planning, been 28 years with state government, 18 years with California State Parks. So I think my initial interest in this process was really I was encouraged by PG&E reaching out and providing this opportunity for education, communication, and to have an informed public. Anytime someone wants to take the opportunity to plan things ahead of time, I feel like I want to support that. So that was really what triggered me to submit my application. But once I thought about it, really, I am concerned about the land use, about repurposing the infrastructure, and the economic impact to the community. Those are my main concerns.
Good evening. My name is Scott Lathrop. I've been in San Luis Obispo for going on 64 years, but my family has a history, I want to say many moons, and when I say many moons, I'm Native American. I actually have ancestry that came from this particular area, so definitely quite very interested in the land use, future land use of the overall site. I'm also very interested in the financial impacts on the community as a taxpayer and also a ratepayer. Very interested on how that would all work out for myself and, of course, my children in the future. So those are the two major items that is primary reasons why I was interested in coming or trying to become on this board. My background, I've done some land development for about 13 years. So kind of know that process, and then for about 20 years, I'm a school administrator, district school administrator, assistant superintendent of business. So again, that's why I'm very interested in the financial side. Thank you. Also, I want to say is that hopefully you did see the email and telephone number. I would welcome anyone to communicate. We're here to try to be a voice for your issues and concerns. I want to say a little bit like Frank, I don't have a specific issue I want to drive home. I'm more interested in serving the public on this issue. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Nancy O'Malley, and I live in Avila Beach. I am a physician in internal medicine, so of course I'm interested in the health and safety issues related to decommissioning, particularly when it comes to long-term fuel storage and transporting all the radioactive material out of the area. So those are key concerns that I have. But I also love the area. I was able to see the Diablo Canyon lands for the first time 2 weeks ago, and they're stunningly beautiful. I feel like it's a treasure to our county, the state, and really the nation. And I would love to see those lands made available to as many people as possible in a sound, environmentally sound way. So I look forward to serving and learning alongside with you. Okay.
Yeah, my name is John Frank. I was introduced earlier. I'm the Vice President for Power Generation for Pacific Gas and Electric. On this committee, I'm really think of me as the one receiving information. My major role is really to listen. And underneath my responsibilities, I have 5,400 megawatts of generation across the state. But to this panel's, I also have under me the responsibility for both execution and planning for nuclear decommissioning activities for the company, both at Humboldt Bay and now as we move towards Diablo Canyon for Diablo Canyon. My background, I've got an education in engineering and business. I have been involved in nuclear power for over 30 years, starting off with the nuclear Navy. I served on a nuclear aircraft carrier as a nuclear-trained officer, and then associated with the Persian Gulf War, after the Persian Gulf War, transitioned to the civilian nuclear industry and have roles in engineering, operations, project management, and for the last 9 years for a series of companies, I've been an executive overseeing the operation and maintenance of nuclear facilities. I've been with PG&E now a little over a year and really focused on not the operation of Diablo Canyon, but the focused work to prepare for this significant and important job here at Diablo Canyon to do the decommissioning and then the other generating facilities for the company. But again, my role is to hear and to listen. My advocacy is for all stakeholders and to take input so that we can make the best choices for the community, for all the stakeholders engaged and involved in this decision.
Thanks. Thank you, panel. I just want to also recognize and thank what we called or the Formation Committee, which is a group of community representatives from throughout the county that actually went through and evaluated the 100-plus applications that were submitted for the panel, and ultimately, in conjunction with PG&E, selected this great diverse group, diverse in perspectives and diverse in their geography throughout the county and their representation of the various communities throughout the county.
Yeah, Chuck, you know, one member of the committee is not here tonight.
That's
and,
right.
And I don't know if you wanted to go over her background. I think it's notable. And
I did. One of our members, Linda Seeley, had a personal emergency tonight, just before the meeting. And would you read her background, Suzanne? Linda, I know, is incredibly dedicated and committed to be on this committee. She has very strong and committed views on a number of issues, and I know she would really love to be here tonight. So,
Linda Seeley, as a mother, grandmother, and resident of San Luis Obispo County since 1982, Linda is a retired nurse midwife and women's health nurse practitioner. She's an advanced facilitator for the Work That Reconnects, developed by Joanna Macy, Ph.D. A resident of Los Osos, she serves as a spokesperson for the San Luis Obispo Mothers for Peace, is a member of the Sierra Club Nuclear Free Core Team, and a founding member and officer for nonprofit Biodiversity First. On the panel, she hopes to be a community voice for the transparent and timely decommissioning of the plant, including the safe storage of irradiated waste.
Thank you very much. I'd like to just go over the agenda before we move on. And again, we've had an introduction of the panel and our public comment period we have scheduled for 8:08. And you notice there's a break right after it. We realize that we're going to keep you and the panel here for almost 2 hours before we take a break. So what we'd like to do is take the break before the public comment. So we're just adjusting the agenda slightly to take the break before the public comment. We do, again, encourage you and make sure you get your comment cards in before 7:30. So the panel has met twice over the last month. And things have happened very quickly. On May 11th, PG&E hosted a tour of the facility, Diablo Canyon Power Plant, and also the lands surrounding the power plant.
Excuse me. Sorry to interrupt. You said 7:30?
I'm sorry?
Cards at 7:30? I thought I heard you say 7:30.
You know, that's only 5 minutes from now.
That's true. That's true. Let's submit the cards by 8 o'clock.
You said 7:30.
I did say 7:30.
Sorry to interrupt.
Nope, no problem.
I don't want to miss the time.
Thanks for pointing that out. Let's submit them by 8 o'clock. I think that'll work. Yeah. So there was an initial meeting and tour of the facility, and then had a follow-up meeting on May 24th. And during that follow-up meeting, they adopted a charter, which you all have a copy. Please make sure you get a copy of the charter, and it was on the posters. And they did a preliminary review of decommissioning topics. And that's what we're here to talk about tonight, are the decommissioning topics. So I just wanted to go over this process, so we'll move forward. With regard to the meeting, the proposed outcome or purpose of the meeting is just an initial meeting of the panel to introduce to the public and also understand some of the public's initial concerns, and again talk about finalizing a schedule of the topics that they want to address for the rest of this year. And the desired outcomes of the meeting you can see here. We've introduced a number of ranges of opportunity for the public to interface with the panel and for all of you to get your ideas and your comments to the panel and to PG&E. We'll go over that in a little more detail. So with that, I would like to pass this on to Tom Jones, who's going to explain to us some of the ins and outs of the regulatory process of decommissioning.
Thank you, Chuck. I'm Tom Jones. I'm the Director of Strategic Initiatives, and my charge to this project is to help lay out the regulatory path for approval so that we get to do the work. I'm joined by my colleague tonight, Lauren Sharp. He's the Senior Director of Decommissioning, leading both our successful Humboldt Bay remediation project and also helping set up the team that will execute the planning and ultimately the work. Tonight, we have a PowerPoint. I apologize for this. level of detail. This is actually a simplified timeline, but we're going to dive into each of these we call swim lanes to talk about the parallel regulatory approvals we need to do between now and 2025 to secure approval to then go into decommissioning. Lauren will then talk about the decommissioning process immediately after myself, and will be available for panel questions. So this process here began with the joint proposal approval. The joint proposal was an application of the Utilities Commission that led for the orderly retirement of Diablo Canyon. And that was important not just for this community, but also to be sure that we had the resources to replace this very large power generation facility as we seek to retire it in about 8 years. With that, PG&E, as Mr. Frank had mentioned, did volunteer to have a community engagement panel. That's the second line down here. And you can see, what you can see is this is 2018. The Utilities Commission made the approval decision, and here we are in May launching this panel. The panel has two main charges. One from the Utilities Commission order is to help run this public process to collect public input about what will happen to the lands. And we have a variety of ideas that you've already heard from both the panel and members of the public. And the second is a couple lanes down. It's this yellow area, and that's also to deal with some of the emergency planning issues as we go forward. Emergency planning is covered by statute through 2025, as long as the plant's operating, and the joint proposal makes some additional recommendations that will then feed into a third thing, which is what the project's working on. And I apologize for the name. It's a nuclear decommissioning cost triennial proceeding. Think of it as the estimate, and it's how we secure funding to conduct the work. So what we'll do is we'll dive into this engagement panel process quickly here. And what you can see is the panel, to help us be ready for submitting this filing, this massive filing at the Utilities Commission, either in December or by March of next year, is going to meet monthly. Now, when you benchmark that, for instance, Southern California Edison down at the San Onofre facility has a panel similar to this. They meet quarterly. After we do this sprinter's pace for the next year, the panel will then meet quarterly, and that gives them at least 31 opportunities to have public meetings before any decommissioning work begins. Additionally, every one of these bubbles in every lane is another public process. So at a minimum, we'll have about 60 public meetings between now and 2025 to discuss the various facets of the decommissioning process. And again, first up for us is this nuclear decommissioning cost triennial proceeding. Think of it as the estimate. And it's a three-year cycle process. We just got a decision last year, and it didn't give us the things we needed to do. However, this is the first filing that we're going to be making next year where relicensing wasn't considered. Folks frankly thought that Diablo Canyon was going to run for another 29 years. Since we've announced the retirement, now there's an additional focus and rigor around this filing to get the correct amount of funding to do that work. And this is also a simplified process, but it looks something like this. Over here, we have PG&E starts to generate plans, and we have a project team of over 20 members, many of whom are here tonight, looking at various facets of decommissioning. We're also seeking third-party input, both from this panel, from regulators, and from subject matter experts and partner companies that can help us inform this estimate. We then prepare that submittal to the Utilities Commission, and hopefully that goes by March of next year. And this will be informed again by the six some odd meetings this panel will have between now and that process. Once we submit it, there's a discovery process where different intervener groups and the regulator ask PG&E additional questions, and ultimately that's adjudicated or ruled on by the Utilities Commission in a public hearing process. That happens again and again. The next 9 years, we have three of these three-year processes. What's critically important about the one we're embarking upon now is its link to other regulatory proceedings. We have to have adequate funding to really define the project, to know how we're going to do the demolition, to know what processes we're going to do, because we then have to seek discretionary permits from the California Coastal Commission, the County of San Luis Obispo, and others. And simultaneously, we'll also need to get some approvals to change the way we will operate the plant after it's not generating power from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. So that's this next process I'm going to highlight here. and it's very similar to the last one. We'll seek this public input, we'll conduct our technical evaluations, and we'll start submitting to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. So that can be things like how we cool the fuel. For instance, San Onofre has something called a spent fuel pool island. They created a new refrigeration system rather than using ocean water to cool the fuel. We might evaluate that. There will be changes to our security posture as the plant changes. All of those require approval from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. PG&E can't act unilaterally on that. Separately, dry cast storage for Diablo Canyon is already over 10 years old. That initial license is only for 20 years. We need to seek license renewal to have our used fuel facility in compliance while we've done this decommissioning project. And then lastly, I'd mention those discretionary permits. This company has done this with this facility a couple of times, one for dry cast storage and another for steam generator replacement, where we went through a full coastal development permit process starting at the county of San Luis Obispo. And that looks like this upper chart here, where we prepare the application, again, after what we hope is a favorable estimate approval from the Utilities Commission, so we have adequate funding to describe the work we intend to do. Once that application is submitted, again with public input from this process, we would then submit to the agency or county, and then that three-year process begins where you have an environmental impact report. You then have hearings at the Planning Commission, ultimately the Board of Supervisors, and generally appealed to the California Coastal Commission. Again, for steam generator replacement project and dry cast storage, those processes took us a little over 3 years. So if you start backing those things up, that's why the approval for this next estimate that the panel is helping with us is so critical, to be sure that we can begin work in 2025, and or at least have the authority to do so, to begin the decommissioning process. So I know it's a little confusing. This information's on our website. We have a poster session out in the back, and the staff will remain after this hearing to further explain this. But that's what these parallel processes are, these approvals we need to then set up Lauren's team for success. And so Lauren's going to come over here and talk to you about what that decommissioning period looks like.
Thanks, Tom. So this graph, if you look at this graph on the very top, you'll see the time frames. The top row is decon, or active execution of decommissioning or demolition that would occur in the top row. And the bottom row is a term called safe store, which means you're waiting either for the fund to grow or to be funded or for some other criteria, perhaps permitting or lack of approval to proceed forward. If you go up to the very first portion and look at the time frame, the upper blue bar talks about the time frame that's required for the fuel to stay in wet storage and the spent fuel pool to make sure the fuel is cooled enough that we could then move it to the dry cast storage. So that's what the first piece is. Parallel to that, in the next bullet down, is basically the time frame where we would be doing the designs and modifications to the site to do things like spent fuel pool island to provide a separate cooling mechanism. Those types of things are typically done by many of the utilities that go into decommissioning because it is a more efficient way to cool without having as many systems and staff on site. So that portion is a more effective way to reduce the cost as you go through decommissioning. The next one down, the one that calls plant decontamination, think of that as like removing the hazardous materials like asbestos, like lead, like PCBs from the plant to make sure you remove those type of constituents out of the facility before you start getting ready to knock the facility down. So you're wanting to make sure that you don't increase your waste costs by having those items as part of the waste debris when you knock down a building. So you go out and remove specifically those areas that have constituents that you need to remove and separate out before you create a mixed waste stream. So it's very important to get that done early. The next bullet down, BOP is balance of plant systems. Think of that as turbines and condensers, things in the turbine building that are essentially more readily accessible. Once we shut down, you know, there are many other portions of the building that will have to wait until the spent fuel pool is moved because of the commonality of the systems and infrastructure. So the BOP systems would be the first ones that you start to go after some of the big items like the turbines or the condensers to remove as you have capability and time. The second blue bar is essentially NSSS's nuclear steam system supply. It's basically those items associated with fluid going through the reactor vessel. You will wait a little bit longer to get a little bit of the radiological decay time so my workers don't get as much exposure when they're taking those systems apart. But it's also more efficient to get that decay time and the planning and the demonstration of the equipment. There will be a number of robotic pieces of equipment we will have to use to cut up the reactor vessel. We need time to design and build those components, test them out before we bring those on site. So that's a lot of the blue bars for the NSSS and the building demolition. After the demolition and decon, you then go into a site restoration. In other words, if I need to remove buildings and return to a natural contour, that's be where I will go out and make sure I've remediated all the land surfaces. Any infrastructure that I need to remove is then properly tested. I make sure I backfill to a natural terrain type of environment, and then I make sure that I comply with the permits that Tom's team hopefully will have provided before I can start. So I need Tom's team to be successful. There are many instances where the sites at other utilities have had to stop while they're waiting for utilities to get that license permit to start doing decommissioning. The next purple bar that you'll notice in the top part associated with, that's with the spent fuel pool, is waiting in dry cast storage for DOE to comply with their commitment to us to pick up the fuel and move it to a Yucca Mountain or to move it to a offsite regionalized storage, whichever Congress decides to approve. Once Congress decides and DOE has the transportation equipment designed, then all of the fuel on our site would be moved under that DOE contract. So once the DOE has completed and we have removed all of the dry cast storage fuel from the site, then there would be essentially an ISFAC demolition of the pad where the fuel has been stored. We'll demolish that. We'll do a site restoration, and that would be the end of the remediation and restoration. So if you notice on the top row, there are two red lines. The first red line talks about when the 10 CFR Part 50 license that we currently have to operate, it'll become a possession-only license. That's when the license would be terminated by the NRC once we turned in all of those scans of how we've cleaned up the land and the areas. And then the last one at the end would be the reduction of the or release of the Part 70 license, Part 71, 72 license that we have with the NRC once ISFAC has been demolished and they have released that license. So the difference between the top row and the bottom row really has to do with strategy. If a good example is if a plant had a drastic failure of a piece of equipment, they had to cease operation. Many times plants have gone immediately into safe store because of two reasons. They don't have a plan, they don't have adequate funding, and so safe store just means that they're waiting for a number of reasons. In the safe store time frame, if we went down the safe store process, you know, for any of those reasons why you don't have funding, why you don't have permits, while you're waiting for something to be approved, the safe store under our current licenses, we're required to have the decommissioning of an operating active license completed within 60 years after we shut down. So that is showing the difference between this line where you have the operating license terminated in 2035. It would have to be in our process terminated somewhere before 2085 to comply with that process under our conditions and our infrastructure and our timeline. So that's kind of the long bandwidth that is available under the federal regulations. In the bottom row, what would happen if you went into SafeStore at the worst extreme would be you could be in this SafeStore process for some time out until the 20. It's past the 2070 time frame when you would be starting demolition of the actual plant so that you would complete by 2085. So if you had SafeStore, it could end up being a situation where you ended up getting all the fuel in dry cask storage, all the fuel goes to DOE, you get the ISFC then demolished and restorated, and that Part 70 license released first, and then you would go into the demolition of the reactor. So what I'm trying to say is, if you go into SafeStore, it can be anywhere from a 1 year of SafeStore up to roughly up to 60 years. So you could move that decommissioning time frame anywhere in there based upon funding, permitting, or related challenges to the fund.
Thank you. Does the panel have any questions of the presenters?
Yeah, I'd just like to underline the point that Lauren was just making from a NRC, federal legal perspective. There are two options that are made available to PG&E and all other companies, and one is SafeStore and one is DECON, decontamination. And SafeStore, and NRC allows licensees, PG&E, to do either one. And so they don't really care. Just pick which one you want to do, and you can do it as far as the NRC is concerned. And the state may have a different perspective. The community may have a different perspective. But as far as NRC is concerned, PG&E can take until the year 2085 to clean up the site. And so I think that's important to put a perspective on the amount of time frame. 67 years from now, everybody in this room will be dead by the time that happens. And anything that we can get cleaned up before that is gravy. It's good. It's better. And PG&E doesn't have to do it as far as the NRC is concerned. And right now, PG&E does appear to be pursuing a decon process, which is a faster process. That is what they indicated in the last triennial proceeding, but they could change their mind. And so they're still evaluating it, and our community will have input into what we would like and hope to have them do and what the time frame would be. And so this is important for us to understand.
Thank you. Any other? Frank.
I'm just looking over the young men over to the far right. They may be the only ones around here.
Any other questions or comments with regard to the presentation? Great, thank you. One of the objectives...
Could any of these slides be made available to the public?
Pardon?
Could any of these slides be made available to the public?
They will all be made available.
They'll all be available on the project website. Yes.
And that's the website you have on the screen here?
That's correct.
www.slowspan.org?
No, it's
pge.com/.
We have materials in the back that have the web address on it.
pge.com/engagement panel.
Thank you.
So one of the things that this meeting is about is to say, okay, what are the issues relating to decommissioning that does PG&E need input on from the public in order for them to move forward with these plans to meet the schedules that they just talked about? The nearest one is submission of a triennial review cost estimate to the PUC. So I asked Tom to, the panel asked PG&E, they said, what do you need? Where can we make the biggest impact? What kinds of information do you need from us, and when do you need it? And Tom came back with this answer and his team.
Thanks, Chuck. So looking at this schedule, again, this is to help inform that estimate, that nuclear decommissioning cost triennial proceeding that we need to submit. And again, this panel has two charges from the Utilities Commission. One is to help weigh in on the lands and repurposing of facilities and the emergency planning issues. So we have the suggested schedule here. It was the first public meeting tonight, then the next public meeting to really get into what that estimate process, that NDCTP, looks like, so that we really understand the timelines, what we intend to submit, the level of rigor we'll need, and the things we'll need to include in it. Then after that, and already raised by some of our panel members, including Alex Carlin, is the funding streams and mechanisms. There are some funds that are regulated by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, though they're collected through the Utilities Commission, and they have different time periods and restrictions associated with them. In addition to that, if there is some optionality in something, it might not be covered in the traditional rate stream. So there's the opportunity potentially for partnerships or new ways to think about this process. And so that's the exciting part about this panel, right? We're going to look at something that's not just a linear project in simply sending everything to a landfill or recycling facility, but look at what are the different options for this community and how can that project be sustainable and the best value for both the community and the customers of PG&E that might ultimately fund this project. So those are the cases we need to really put in that. So then after that, what we propose is to have the land and repurposing discussion. We recognize that that'll have to have some workshops in front of that meeting. It's too complex to take care of in 2.5 hours. And we also have our tour program that often does land tours. So we will flex our tour program to help support public interest at those that want to see the facility. You know, we take about 2,000 people a year out to that station, and additional folks do also experience it through either a public workshop or online. But we want to make sure that folks have an opportunity to get their hands around or their head around this issue. For context, it's over 12,000 acres and over 11 miles of coastline and over 45 parcels, all with some different zoning implications and some regulatory implications. And some are further encumbered or complicated by either lease holdings or other infrastructure requirements, or some even have conservation easements on them or public trail dedications, for instance. So again, PG&E can't act unilaterally on the land decisions. We need that input, and we need the cooperation and feedback from the community to incorporate into those filings. Then spent fuel is always a topic of interest for the public, so we have that proposed in September, and that would also be maybe more of a workshop with some third parties other than just PG&E and the panel. And then October will be heavily engaged with the county as our chief partners in emergency planning. And then November would look at the economic impact closure. The panel wanted to discuss that in the first year. And then we would think about what the batting order is for 2019 and potentially 2020. So this is just the first sketch at this, recognizing again we'll have to augment some of these things with additional workshops or opportunities for the public to have a meaningful engagement with the panel. I'd be happy to answer any questions that the panel might have.
And this is a topic that we're going to discuss later on in the panel. We have an opportunity for discussion about these particular things. But in the meantime, do you have any questions, Kara?
Yes. Thank you, Tom. I'm looking at the August meeting, and we're talking about the lands, which is a 12,000 acres, repurposing facilities, which are all those structures that surround the power plant, parcel P, as some people refer to it. And then we also have to consider the marine environment and the intake cove and the discharge cove. And it just seems to me that's an awful lot to cover in one meeting. And I was just wondering if we might be able to split those up and have two meetings and then move everything beyond that one extra month.
I'll defer that decision to the panel. Certainly, we envision many workshops in front of that, and we have some sketches right now that we'll present to the panel probably in the next week or two. We're thinking about ways to break that up, almost similar to an appellate court where there might be three panelists at a time listening to different public proposals at a public workshop, so that it's not two 12-hour meetings for the panels back-to-back, but a way to divvy up the work and have many hands make light work. We'll get there to where we need to go, and this is something that is required and needs to be in the filing. If we need to add a second public meeting, maybe that's the first one. You know, fuel is going to be an issue we talk about all the time, and we don't have a December meeting yet slated as well. So we can look at that, and I think you'll have some discussion a little bit later, but I agree with you that it's not a 2.5-hour meeting. It's a 22-and-a-half-hour meeting that we're not going to do in one night.
Sherry, and then Frank.
Okay. I would like to see it divided into lands for the first of the two meetings and then repurposing facilities second and moving it a month, I guess, into December.
Just, Ms. Dunn, just for clarity, are you suggesting that everything slides back a month and that the lands are back-to-back, or were you stating you'd like repurposing in December? That would be a challenge for our project team. If
no, I think lands in August and repurposing in September.
Okay, thanks for the clarification. Appreciate it.
Well,
Brian.
Tom, looking at your schedule for public workshops and tours, the tours are for the public.
Correct.
And how many times are you anticipating doing the tours, and how will folks have an opportunity to sign up for the tours?
So people can just contact PG&E. We have information in the back right now for our tour program. We make it available on our website. There's phone number, and you can just stop by our Energy Education Center on Ontario Avenue. We've done larger land tours before. We've taken 60 folks at a time in some buses. Makes for some interesting rides across a few of those roads. And then we also typically take tours in groups of 20 or less, but we do them regularly 3 to 4 times a week right now.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Alex?
Yeah, I would just want to mention that maybe we could have two full-day workshops in August rather than just one if we wanted to A, expedite it, and B, cover a lot more material. I'd be willing to do that. And I would also say that I think how we do this is really the panel's decision. We shouldn't necessarily ask Tom as if it's his permission. Of course, we need PG&E's help and support and whether they can accommodate that, but it is the panel's decision of how often to meet and how to conduct this. So but of course, we need their help in conducting this. But we would also want to invite, presumably, or have relevant stakeholders and maybe agencies attend and give them a half an hour or 15-minute time frame to give a presentation to the panel and to PG&E and the public so we could hear what they have in mind vis-a-vis, say, the use or reuse of the lands and how it would be implemented and how it would be funded. And so we can learn a lot from not just from PG&E, but from the community. We need to give them a venue for giving a presentation, not just a 2 or 3 minute public comment.
Okay. Any other comments or questions? Yes, Dina.
So, Tom, I don't know if this is for you, but of the topics that we're looking at discussing, what is more of a priority for the triennial proceeding? I'm looking at economic impact in November and thinking that probably shouldn't be pushed, because I think that's probably information that would be essential for that report.
It actually is not part of that proceeding.
Okay.
So that is looking at the more global impacts and the economic study that's going to be done in partnership with, that is derived from Senate Bill 980 that the Economic Vitality Corporation and Berkeley and the Utilities Commission overseeing. And it also would talk about some of the spending from this estimate. And so it looks at the economic activity, not just for decommissioning, but for the plant's continued operations, and also some of the strategies that the community, particularly the county, is looking at, how to create head of household jobs, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So that's broader and more out of scope. It's clearly related to the community, but that does not affect our 2019 filing.
Okay. I just want to be conscious of pushing things too far and not being able to address things in a future meeting. But I do agree that all of that agenda in August is a lot.
Correct. And again, the land use and the emergency planning are the two requirements from the Utilities Commission for this filing.
One more comment before we move on. Anyone? Okay. Thank you, Tom. We're now on agenda item number 8, and what I would like to do is just make sure that everybody has submitted their comment cards if you would want to speak. So, Adam, yes?
I'm just curious if we want to resolve that issue before we move on to the next item.
Okay.
I'm hearing the people that have spoken are interested in some kind of splitting up of all those topics in August, whether it's moving it a month or doubling up that month. And I guess I would like to close that issue before we move on.
You know what? We've got another agenda item where we've got 20 minutes for the panel to talk about this topic.
Okay.
And actually do a poll on everyone's opinion on it.
Okay.
So
you'd rather hold off?
Coming.
Okay.
This was essentially an introduction.
Okay. Thank you.
So the next slide, we want your opinions. We want your comments about this schedule that's being proposed and about anything else that you think that the panel should be considering at this point. As you've heard, there's going to be many opportunities for public engagement, workshops, up to 30 meetings, and specific topics when those topics require input. But we're going to provide this opportunity for you to talk to the introductory panel, introductory comments, so to speak. Again, I just want to review very quickly how this works. There's multiple opportunities for the ways you can comment. If you go on the internet, you'll find a link to a form where it asks you what your concern is and do you have any suggestions or comments. You can put your name in or not. If you put your name in, you'll be registered to get further future information and emails about the process. So I would recommend that if possible. Those comments are going to be reviewed the same as a comment standing up here at the microphone today. And the way we plan on doing that, and those comments will go to the panel, PG&E's reviewing and hearing them at the same time. The panel's going to analyze those and decide which ones, what ideas they hadn't thought of before that they might want to bring forward, and ask PG&E to do research on. Ask P&E to do some studies to evaluate whether these ideas make sense or not. So the panel is the mechanism to get requests to PG&E to do work and analyze issues further. And then eventually that feeds into the decommissioning estimate for this round and possibly future rounds. And that's going to be submitted probably around March of the next year. So there's a lot of work to do between now and then. So what do we do with this information? Go to the next slide. This is the information. These are the topics, list of topics that we're collecting input and ideas for. And as topics come in, whether it's a comment at a public meeting or whether it's filling out a form at the computer back in the room, in the poster room, or it's going on the internet and filling out a comment card, or if it's sending an email to one of the panelists or to PG&E, it's going to be recorded. And the panel will be able to look at this dashboard and actually see how many comments are included in each of these categories. And before every meeting, every public meeting, we're going to make it part of the meeting to do a report out on the comments that were received in the previous period. So we're keeping very good track of all these comments. We're analyzing them, looking what categories they're in, and the panelists and PG&E can actually look at each individual comment and evaluate those comments. They're taking this very seriously. So just wanted to show you this before we move on to the public comment period. So originally we decided to jump right into the public comments, but we want to take a break now. So let's take a 10-minute break, and let's come back at 8:15. And we'll start the public comment process. So everybody who wants to comment has submitted their card.
Sure. Yes.
Thank you.
What did you do?
Pardon?
The yellow and the blue triangles. Yellow pointed up and blue pointed down.
It's whether the number of comments have increased or decreased.
Okay.
That's what that was about.
What if you just have a question and not a comment?
The panel's not answering questions.
No.
You have it right now? What is it?
I think Alex talked about the NRC didn't care whether PG&E was going to be doing a decon or...
And we're going to start the public comment period. We have about 10 comment sheets, and so we're going to allocate 3 minutes for each person to speak. The panel is not going to respond or take questions or anything like that. They just want to hear your opinion at this point and hear your ideas and comments. So before we begin, I do want to read one comment card. Well, I guess I can. It was submitted, and it is difficult for us to read. So what we're going to do is take this card. We're going to go back to the author of the card and clarify what their intent was and so on. So I just want to acknowledge that for the record. I'm going to call members. What we want to do is have one person here, and then one ready, and another one ready. So when I call a name after someone speaks, please come up and take the vacant position, if you would. The first person that's going to speak is David Wiseman. David, come over here, and in on deck, Patrick McGibbrey, and I apologize for butchering names in advance. Next over here is Rochelle Becker, and next over here is Sean Pringle. So
it was me. Okay.
Please proceed.
Good evening, panelists, and I'm not officially the person to welcome you, but we welcome you, I guess, as the public. Thank you. Thank you for your engagement and your offer of service. My name is David Weissman. I'm the outreach coordinator of the Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility. And while you've already heard, there seems to be a rather heavy burden of research and information, and I don't want to make you have to drink further from the large fire hose that's being sprayed at you. But would it further that, having said that, by saying there's probably other external groups and agencies that you may or may not be aware of whose input and consultation is something that you might want to consider as your panel moves forward, the kind of folks who you might even want to invite or engage to work with you. And on this case, I point out to one group also chartered by the California Public Utilities Commission, and that's the Independent Peer Review Panel, which was established by the PUC to provide a state-based oversight of the seismic studies that PG&E does at the Diablo Canyon site. And where the nexus would be for this panel's work is because the Independent Peer Review Panel, which meets in San Francisco periodically and whose meetings are available on our website and our YouTube channel, A4NR YouTube channel, in their entirety, is because that panel was going to expire but was extended. And as part of the extension, the law, Cacho Ajadian's law that did this, said the commission shall convene or continue until August 26, 2025, an independent peer review panel to conduct an independent review of enhanced seismic studies and surveys of the Diablo Canyon Units 1 and 2 power plant, here's the key line, including the surrounding areas of the facility and the areas of nuclear waste storage. So listening to this panel as they go ahead and analyze that might affect it, because when you're looking to possibly reuse, redevelop, do something with the land, you wouldn't, for example, want to build or put something in a place that might be seismically unstable. And so as these experts further untangle what is the fractured soil underneath, it might be worth inviting them or considering their input, because they will be giving, in a sense, an analysis of the very land itself that you are actually talking about when you talk about reusing the land. And as we saw spent fuel up there, as well the seismic stability of the spent fuel area, which itself could be impact or have an impact on whatever surrounding development should occur. So again, I just point out the independent peer review panel of the CPUC as a resource and go-to as your work moves forward. Thank you very much and best of luck.
Thank you. Next over here is Don Maruska, And I would just like to mention tonight we're offering 3 minutes because of the number of speakers we have and the time. In the future, if we have a lot more speakers within a limited amount of time, it could be 2 minutes or it could even be 1 minute. So tonight we're fortunate to be able to offer three. So, go ahead.
Thank you. This is
and please state your name clearly and your residence for the record.
My name's Patrick McGibney. I'm from Baywood Park. I've been there for 45 years. This is more of a question than a comment, but I'd like to thank the commission for your volunteerism and for your dedication to our community. One comment that Alex had made was the fact that the NRC doesn't really care if PG&E does a safe store or does the decon. So I would like to believe that PG&E is doing what's in the community's best interest, but we all know that PG&E is a large corporation and they do what's in their rate or their shareholders' best interest. So if they can choose a longer period to extend their time for decommissioning, such as another 67 years, I think, as Frank mentioned, and then also I think Frank, you did mention that none of us are going to be here in that time. So what we're doing tonight could be completely moot. If we're talking about land use, what we're going to do with the land, and they extend it out another 30, 40 years, there's going to be a whole other community that's living here at that time and may make another decision. So you need to be able to get the money from the ratepayers to be able to decommission the plant. The longer you wait, the more money that you can be accumulating. How do we know the PG&E is really going to be moving forward with this at this time? That would be my question to Tom, I believe it is, and that's not a rhetorical question. I'd like an answer. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up over here is Jean Nelson. Go ahead.
Okay. My name is Rochelle Becker, and I'm the Executive Director of the Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility, and I would like to welcome you as one of the person on the selection committee. I have read all of your resumes, impressed by every single one of you, and I'm glad that you are available to sit in this committee. There is another resource, but I think it's helpful. The Alliance not only works on the Diablo Canyon issue, but we have also worked on the San Onofre issue for decades. And so we watched closely the engagement panel at San Onofre. And we reached out to that panel before I actually read your resumes to say, okay, what are your pluses and what are your minuses? What do you think are the good points of your committee and what are some of the drawbacks? They thought that meeting three times a year was a drawback. So I'm not telling them you're meeting 10 times a year or more. But they have to squeeze that in, and you need to know that you can't burn out. This is really an important job, so thank you for doing it, but also know that they feel the pressure. They also thought it was very important to have elected officials. We don't have any current elected officials, but we do have former elected officials, and we're glad to see you there, Frank. But I would recommend you reach out to the SONGS decommissioning panel. They had invited the chair of that panel to speak at the next Diablo Canyon Independent Safety Committee meeting, which is in, I think it's June 14th and 15th. I'm not positive the schedule is going to work for that, but if not, they will try again in their fall meeting. David's an excellent resource. He's the he teaches at UCSB. I would recommend that you show up when he's there and take advantage of him being in our community. This has been they've had a lot of negatives and a lot of positives, a lot of community anger, and a lot of community support. And you're going to be facing all of the same things, and I just wish you all well in your job. Thank you.
Thank you. Next over here is William George. On deck.
So he.
Go ahead.
You'll be after me. He's first?
I'm sorry, you're on deck over here. So.
Oh, okay, thank you. Just doing that?
Go ahead, sir.
Okay. Good evening. My name is Dr. Gene Nelson. I have a PhD in radiation biophysics, and I serve as the government liaison to Californians for Green Nuclear Power Incorporated. We are a CPUC intervener who has legal standing in this proceeding, and we have challenged the proceeding. We filed an application for a rehearing, and we've given you some summary information in these handouts that I believe everybody now has. Our goals are to protect the region's economy and the environment. We know in the case of songs that rates skyrocketed 20 to 25% when songs was abandoned because of mismanaged routine service. We want to maintain the option for desalination. Diablo Canyon could put in a huge desalination facility to help this area, much bigger than Carlsbad. We also know that there's precedent for these kinds of proceedings to be pushed back. In the case Palisades Nuclear Plant, there was pushback, and the owners of Palisades, rather than voluntarily abandoning their plant, said, to heck with this, we'll keep running. And we strongly encourage PG&E to consider that as something, and we will be persisting to make sure that happens. We've been fighting for ratepayers and the environment since 2013 with countless trips, thousands of miles logged to places like San Francisco and Sacramento. We're currently bird docking SB 1090, which just passed in the California State Senate, but we testified against it in three separate hearings. So in terms of what my own experience, I've served as a professor of engineering at Cal Poly and a physical sciences professor at Cuesta College. And one of the key things that I encourage everyone on this panel, as my students, is to practice critical thinking, not to just go into following emotions and fear and fear-mongering. Unfortunately, that's been the narrative a lot here. Now, furthermore, as a private citizen, I own a home in San Luis Obispo. I've loved this area. I've been here since 2006. I want to protect the value of my home, and I do not want to see the likely ruinous increases in property taxes. So for all those reasons, we want to keep the plant running, and we hope to put your committee out of business. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You would speak over here after him. Okay. And next over here on deck would be Fred Collins, and we have Mr. Maruska speaking.
Hello, I'm Don Maruska. Our family are 24-year residents of the county. We're living in Los Osos. And I just wanted to share some perspectives with you because as somebody who founded three companies in Silicon Valley and now since coming to this area serve as a business coach to organizations and work with people in solving tough issues together, I see tremendous opportunity for this community out of this. Change creates opportunity. And so how can we capitalize on that? And that, I think, is really the cornerstone of what we have an opportunity to assess here. So I'm looking at what can be a win-win-win possibility in this context. By that, I mean a win for the community, a win for PG&E and its ratepayers, and a win for the partners that might come forward and provide new opportunities out of the Diablo Canyon power plant overall facility. But how are we going to do that, and what can we do to make that happen? That's going to be the critical issue. The way it can be a win-win-win is that if there are opportunities for partners in the community to make use of facilities at Diablo Canyon, that then means that PG&E won't have to go to the full expense of taking those facilities down to bare ground and trying to remediate everything. These are all the existing use facilities. That they can actually save money on what the decommissioning is going to cost. And that creates also an opportunity for groups, be they Cal Poly or others, I'm not speaking on their behalf, but there are a lot of different groups that I've been brainstorming with that have ideas about what could be done there. So what's needed, though, to make that happen is that these things take a long time to come together. My experience in other communities with these kinds of transition projects is that oftentimes they take 8 years of planning to come to fruition. So when we're looking at 2025, 2025 is around the corner for assembling the agencies, the grants, and everything else you need to do any significant thing on this parcel. So my suggestion to the panel and to PG&E is to really forward think this. Maybe put out some money on a proposal basis to organizations that want some help and get some resources to do some advanced planning. Then you could put into this triennial report concrete ideas on the alternate uses, and you would begin to get the things rolling, and we could leverage other money from the community, from federal agencies, et cetera, to make these things happen and to actually get this economy turning around versus just going stalling out in 2025. So with your good leadership, and I've had the pleasure of working with a number of you on solving tough issues together, I'm sure that you can pull this off. But I think we need to start now rather than say, okay, we're going to look at what's going to happen down the road and hope that your forward leadership will help carry us there. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next on deck over here is William Tommen. Go ahead.
Good evening, members of the panel. My name is Sean Pringle. I'm an engineer at the power plant. I was born at Sierra Vista Hospital. I've been a member of the community my whole life. I went to Cal Poly, graduated in 2016. My first job out of college has been working at Diablo Canyon Power Plant. When I did my first tour at the power plant, I was incredibly amazed by just how great of a facility it was and the amazing, remarkable employees that work there. I just wanted to echo what Mr. Baldwin mentioned, which is that we have a very talented workforce. Many of them are young, and by 2025, they'll still have 15, 20, 30 more years of workforce life ahead of them. So I just wanted it to be a discussion topic for the panel, how we can continue to support that talented workforce after the plant, if it's reusing the infrastructure at the plant and helping to retain them because they have families in this area. And like myself, it's difficult to leave once you've been here so long. And the last thing I just wanted to echo was Mr. Frank's comment. We're still operating the power plant safely and reliably every day. It's been our mission, and it'll continue to be our mission even throughout these next few years. That's what we're going to do for our families and our community. And we all kind of have it in our hearts that it's never too late to turn back and to continue operating, but it's our commitment to this community to operate that plant safely and reliably. So thank you.
Thank you. I don't know if Fred Collins was next over here. And go ahead, sir.
Hi, my name is William Glogie. I'm president of California Insure Green Nuclear Power. We've been in business for about 5 years. Most of us are educated. We've got 4 PhDs from MIT, Stanford, Cal Berkeley, places like that. We are for keeping the plant open because we see global warming as a tremendous threat bearing down upon everybody on the planet. Now, I don't know if you feel yourselves as members, representatives of PG&E or of the public. Please think of yourself as representatives of the public. I started this organization for my 2 grandchildren because I read a lot about global warming and the absolute threat that poses to our Earth. Now, the best scientists like James Hansen of the United States and James Lovelock of the UK are saying nuclear power is the best option for replacing fossil fuel that is killing the planet. I used to be on the same side as my friends at Diablo Canyon, and I kind of miss those days. We were saying the same thing, supporting the same cause, and it was a great cause, and it's a great plant. And the people that work up there are unbelievable. They're some of the best people I've met in my life. So, you know, I'm not against anybody or disliking anybody, anything like that. I'm up here for the planet and for my grandchildren. And there's a great grandfather coming up. Think about this. Now, if you represent the public, think about that, those grandchildren and the great-grandchildren, because that's the most important thing to think about. The PG&E is a company, but it's a public utility. It's not like your clothing shop down at the store, the corner can close anytime it wants. It's a public utility, and that's why it's controlled by the government. And we need to keep this public utility going. This plant's good for another 60 years. They just put in about $780 million worth of improvements. I've toured it 4 times. It's fantastic. They watch everything, they check everything, and then they check it again. So I'm for keeping the plant open, and I hope you will be too. And I hope you will keep an open mind and think of yourselves as a representative of my grandchildren and yours and all the grandchildren here. Global warming is serious business. We're at a lot, 44 parts per million CO2 in the atmosphere. Did I have that right? I'm a little nervous up here, but we got a lot of CO2, and that doesn't come down for a long time. So, you know, please keep the minimum amount of CO2 by keeping Diablo Canyon open, and let's build more nuclear plants like they are in many places in the world right now. Thank you very much, everybody.
Go ahead, sir.
Fred Collins, Chair for the Northern Chumash Tribal Council. I'm here today speaking as an agency. We're not a public entity. We are a stakeholder in this process. I want to thank PG&E and this panel for convening. As the process moves forward, we will be reviewing everything from at the PUC to the EPA, the California Coastal Commission. In all the different agencies, we have review power. So what I'm here today to do is to offer you our opinions and our services as you move forward. We think it's critical that you have Native American input on these issues that are going to be going on out there at the plant. I have the... in my lifetime, I've seen it start. I saw it, you know, I saw the protest. I saw it built. I saw it built backwards, and I saw it rebuilt again. And, you know, and I've seen the process of how our cultural resources have been vastly destroyed out there. And I want to make sure that everybody understands that as we decommission and as we shut this down, we're not going to stand for the same kind of destruction of Native American resources as there was in the beginning when this thing was put up. It should stop. We're here trying to preserve 1% of 100% that was underneath our stewardship in the beginning. So, you know, it's very important that we, as an agency and a stakeholder, we would like to come back and, you know, I can spend some time and really giving you our in-depth understanding of what that property is all about. You know, we're concerned about, you know, the future uses. You know, we have an application in for a marine sanctuary, Chumash Heritage Marine Sanctuary off our coast. These things are super important to us. And, you know, the preservation of our cultural resources out there is primary. And, you know, when you, whatever you come up with, if you have our input and you have our opinions on the table, you may not agree with them, but at least you're going to be able to make a decision that, you know, you've got all the information. And, you know, my family and I, we've been walking this land for over 15,000 years continuously. My family's from the Pecho. The village that was destroyed when the plant went in was my family's village. So, you know, we have deep roots in this whole process. We haven't been contacted by PG&E to get into the consultation process yet, but there's a long process. I know I won't even be here when it's done. My grandson will be. But, you know, I think it's really important that you have our input, and so I'm here to offer our assistance and input anytime you guys want to, you know, look through the lens of a Native American tribal government. Please give us a call. Send me an email. www.northernchumash.org is our webpage. You can see my email there. So thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you. Mr. Tomlin.
Good evening. My name is Bill Tomlin. I live in Los Osos. Thank you very much for joining this august panel. We need to have a diverse set of voices to properly plan for the incredible changes coming to our region through the retirement of the Diablo Canyon nuclear plant. I'm a graduate nuclear engineer, and my first job out of engineering school was with the manufacturer of the reactor at Diablo Canyon, Westinghouse Electric, out in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I've worked for two nuclear utilities in my career. And so I'm very familiar with the processes, the mechanics, the physics, all the things that go on with nuclear power plants, keeping them safe, and the eventual retirement of those facilities when their time has come. PG&E's economic consultants, when they put together the joint proposal, did an analysis of how much Diablo Canyon will be used in 2025. And the number that they came up with is that it would be producing about 9 gigawatt hours a year of electricity. Currently, it generates about twice that, 18 gigawatt hours a year. This is because there's going to be increasing penetration of renewable energy over the next 8 years, and there's a flight of load from the traditional utilities to community choice aggregation entities. Between those two phenomenon, Diablo Canyon is simply not going to be needed in 2025. The ALJ for the CPUC came to a finding that the Diablo Canyon output is not necessary for the reliability of the grid of California. I'm here to say that it is perfectly feasible to replace all of the 9 gigawatt hours a year of generation of Diablo in 2025 with renewable energy and storage. And I would urge this panel to look at, especially during the sessions for repurposing the assets of Diablo, to perhaps consider a parallel path about what could be repurposed for renewable energy and especially for offshore wind, which could, with just 200 or 300 floating wind turbines, completely replace that 9 gigawatt hours of generation here on the Central Coast, providing jobs in the construction and maintenance of that new renewable energy technology while putting the Diablo Canyon plant to a safe rest. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Did anyone, just to check, did anyone submit a blue card and not get an opportunity to speak? Okay, thank you all very much, and thank you everyone for offering your comments. We are now on agenda item number 11, and that is a discussion of the decommissioning topics for future meetings. And can you switch me over?
Yes.
Okay, and here is the decommissioning topics that were suggested, and everyone can see those. What I would like you to do, panel, is to grab your clickers. And let's do a quick poll. And the question is, to what extent do you support the proposed decommissioning topic schedule as it was proposed by Tom? On a scale from 1 to 5, let's do a quick snapshot of where we are. Oh. Well, that's my car. That one's mine. I was looking for that. Is there another one around? Or? Ah, here they are. Sorry about that. You had to click on the controls the whole thing. Okay, is everyone in? I see 8 people have responded. 1, 2, 3. We should have 10. There we go. Oops. And right now, it looks like we have a perfect bell-shaped curve. We have 3 that support, 5 are neutral, and 3 that oppose. So let's talk about that. What about why might someone oppose this proposed schedule as it was proposed right now?
Yes. So the reason that I chose to oppose it was we were looking at how Tom described what they need. It looked to me like September and October could potentially be switched, and that could offer the emergency planning earlier that they need. That was my opposition.
Okay. Sherry, did you have a comment?
I did. It's the same comment. Oh, thank you. Same comment as I made earlier, that I'd like to see 2 workshops or 2 meetings for land and repurposing.
Okay. Anyone else? Yes, Kara.
Same. I agree with Sherry.
Okay.
I would say with a tight timeline, definitely we would want to zero in on the items that PG&E see most critical path, because I think it's important that we try to make those timelines. If we fall off the timelines, well, then we may be into that other phase where we're on a hold mode. So I think it's important to try to zero on the ones that are priority for PG&E.
Okay. Okay. Any other comments or observations?
You know, this is great input on the schedule, and I really appreciate it. I do want to make sure we're kind of grounded. The decision on land use, August is not a – we need to inform our next submittal to the commission. Don't see that as the end of the discussion on land use, though. I want to make sure that everybody's clear. We will have many discussions on land use. As Tom talked, that's the first of three opportunities to go back to the CPUC to revise our estimate. Our commitment in this submittal is really to talk about options that we have for land use. Some of our decisions may adjust that cost estimate based on what we perceive as future land use. None of those final decisions can be made this year. I think one of the speakers mentioned, it takes years to work through the agencies that will be required to review any future land use for this land. So any recommendations or proposals or options we discuss in this next filing will not be final. So we're going to have I just want to make sure everybody feels comfortable. That doesn't mean I'm disagreeing with the comment we may need two meetings. I just want to make sure everybody feels comfortable. Even with two meetings, there's going to be a lot of opportunity to talk about this in the future.
Okay. Frank, and then Alex.
I guess that kind of goes back to the question that Mr. McGibney asked. At what point do we see a go, no-go on the determinations from PG&E and from what the panel has suggested?
Go ahead and respond.
Well, every one of those regulatory approval paths is a go, no-go, frankly, when we pursue those discretionary permits and the funding. What's key is that this next funding estimate has adequate resources when approved by the Utilities Commission so that we can inform that project description to do two things: seek the discretionary permits from the county and the Coastal Commission and state lands, and then also allow us to contract to get that work lined up to do it. So this estimate is still the key go, no-go for that process.
Let me add a little bit more to that, Frank. You know, basically, we've been going through these hearings for some time with the NDCTP, but what I have been saying most of the time in the hearings is that we haven't committed to DECON yet because we're not adequately funded yet. So that's probably the biggest piece we need out of this estimate going forward.
Alex and then Lauren.
I voted to support the plan here, but with the same caveats, I think, that Sherry expressed as opposed, which is I think we may need to have two sessions in August on lands and repurposing of facilities. Break that into two, and I contemplate them to be not just a three-hour meeting. So I support, in general, the schedule, and it's one that we kind of came up in collaboration with Tom. Tom didn't invent this on his own, but these are show PG&E what they think are their needs and what we think would be good that the community would want to input. But I would agree with John's perspective in that 2085, just keep that in mind. I don't think we're going to see a lot of decisions and commitments in the next 3 or 4 months as to what's going to happen to the 12,000 acres out there or that sort of thing. Or, you know, and the triennial proceeding, which PG&E is telling us is so urgent, is going to be three iterations of this before the plant stops operating. So there's a lot of time frame here to have this happen, and I don't think anything's going to happen that's critical in the next 6 months that will be submitted in the triennial proceeding that will be problematic. And I think that as far as the PUC is concerned, when they issued their decision in June 6, 2017, 1 year ago almost exactly, they ruled that PG&E did have sufficient funding to handle the decommissioning of the plant, at least as far as they could tell, and that PG&E had asked for more, and they had not justified that additional amount. Now PG&E is back, and they are going to take another shot at it, and we want to make sure that they take a good shot at it, and we provide some assistance in that respect. But I don't think we're going to see a commitment from PG&E or anybody else in the next year as to exactly what's going to happen about the 12,000 acres or any other significant part of it. This is a long process, and the main thing to keep in mind is this is a long process, and there's not going to be some crucial decision in the next 3 months that this panel can help effectuate. We can give input, but I don't think it's, you know, we ought to manage our expectations here as to what we are trying to do and what we can and cannot do and what PG&E is reasonably willing to do as a regulated entity. They have to make a lot of decisions.
Thank you. Lauren.
I just wanted to echo what Scott said. Let's make sure that we are setting the schedule to meet the highest priority needs that PG&E has. And I didn't hear a response. Is this schedule reflect your greatest needs, or do you want to see some adjustments?
We can accommodate the adjustments that have been discussed, including additional workshops. The two items that are of most urgency to us, again, are the emergency planning issue and the land use issues. So we have flexibility there. We always postulated workshops in front of your hearing, and so we can make reasonable adjustments to that. Again, land and emergency planning are the two front burner issues for the next filing.
Trevor?
So Tom, just, would it make more sense from your planning perspective for the emergency planning on October to be moved to September? Would that be beneficial at all?
I think there's a lot of other jurisdictional involvement we want to have with that, with the allied cities, the state OES, et cetera, and your OES as well for the County of San Luis Obispo. I think that time frame gave us some of that front work, and we also would envision some additional workshops and other regulatory interface that's not, you know, at PG&E's
right
discretion. I could see fuel sliding back, and if we have additional workshops, and maybe your meeting is a bifurcated meeting where you give an update on where you're at, have additional workshop, and we can do that cadence over that course of about 60 to 90 days to really vet a lot of ideas and have a way to synthesize that for the filing, that would be helpful.
Okay.
Tom and Lauren, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. The July meeting, July 25th, that's an important topic to get through. Is it a three-hour topic? The July 25th meeting, the funding topic. I don't think we need a full meeting for that.
We can do a lot of pre-work and maybe even some other regulatory briefing papers on that and reduce that scope, and we can have a kickoff to land and increase that, add to the project schedule.
That's my suggestion.
So it depends. I don't know that that's 3 hours, but it's a meaty topic.
It's an important topic, but I don't know if it really requires 3 hours to talk through the issues there. I don't, Alex, I see body language there that may say you have a different opinion.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure. It seems to me that one of the key questions I've been asking on this panel is who pays? Everybody wants something out of this decommissioning process. They want parks, they want, whatever, they want land, they want money, and who's going to pay for all of it? And so this is one of the topics for the July 25th meeting. Where's the money going to come from? And there may be not, it's not all just PG&E. It's ratepayers. I mean, it's ratepayers. It's PG&E stockholders. It's maybe the community. It's also the Department of Energy. Yes. The management of spent fuel on that site, DOE is responsible to reimburse PG&E for all of that cost. From January 31st, 1998 to whenever they take it away to Yucca Mountain or anybody else. So who's going to pay? It may not be a hugely fascinating topic, but it is the bottom line that's going to drive a lot of the decisions. Who's going to, okay, this is all great ideas. Who's going to pay for it?
Yeah, Alex, great point. I've got a little more insight into what we need in July, though.
Yeah.
What we need in July isn't that question. It's it talks about the NRC rules relative to the decommissioning fund and approaching the CPUC with some options to provide funding for necessary work between now and shutdown. We're going to have a lot of time to talk about your question about individual components of work and where that funding would occur. I agree with you completely. A very important topic. But what we need in July isn't that. It's different. It's This is really and I know that you're very familiar with the 3% rule. We want to get the board familiar with the NRC funding rules on trust funds and how we need the advice of the board and support of the board relative to some CPUC filings that will be coming up. So a different topic than the important one you just discussed.
Okay.
And I'm looking to my team to see if that's an accurate representation.
That is accurate, but I would also give you guys all a homework assignment. If you go home and look at your utility bill for the next month, there is a line on there that says nuclear decommissioning, which funds both Humboldt Bay and Diablo Canyon in that nuclear decommissioning line item.
Yeah, and on that, before we go on, Kara's care to speak, and we'll come back to you, Alex.
Thank you. I still believe that lands, repurposing facilities, and the marine environment is just too much to cover for one day. It would be such a long day. I think it would be exhausting. And we also have to consider that that meeting, more than any of them, may attract a large number of people from the top, from the public, and everybody's going to have something to say. So I would suggest maybe we have a couple of options. The first option is just to put the second meeting in September and move everything else down a month. But if that option doesn't work because it doesn't get us on track for our filing in March, then I might suggest a second meeting in August, maybe 1 week prior to August 29th, so we can stay on track. And I think either way, you achieve the purpose of giving enough time for people to come and hear about these really important issues and also make a few comments about them.
Okay. Thank you. Alex, did you want to have follow up?
Yeah, just in follow-up to John and Tom's and Lauren's point, as far as the NRC regulations are concerned regarding the decommissioning fund, NRC requires a company to have decommissioning funds and to save those funds, and they can only be spent on decommissioning and in accordance with the specific requirements that NRC imposes. And what generally happens in the decommissioning
if
of a new...
Stay on track on these topics.
Yeah, but this is the topic of what's going to happen on July 25th, okay. Which is what generally happens in these topics is the nuclear power companies ask to dip into those decommissioning funds prior to the time that NRC would otherwise allow them to do so. And what they have to do is ask for exemptions from the NRC regulations in order to do so. And that's what all nuclear power plants who are decommissioning have been doing in the last 5 or 6 years. And that's what PG&E will do. And they'll need NRC's approval on that and PUC's, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But the long story short is that's what we will be seeing is requests for exemptions from the NRC restrictions on the use of the funds and asking to use the money earlier. And
go
ahead, Scott.
Instead of kind of going there, I look at that overall day or presentation just to learn more about that, those options. And I think that's really what probably PG&E wants to do. They want to share that process with us because we'd like to know, yes, there's a certain amount of dollars that are coming out of everybody's utility, but we'd like to know how can we capitalize on those dollars. I hear you. You're saying that, well, it's maybe coming from a negative side instead of a positive side, but personally, I don't have that information. I think the community and would like to hear that. I probably would agree that probably it's going to be shorter than longer unless we get sidetracked with some other discussions and so forth. So I think it's probably an opportunity to kind of, you know, tighten up the schedule a little bit by maybe talking about something else that night also. But I think we're not there yet to talk about those issues. Mm-hmm.
Tom, do you have, based on this conversation, do you have a suggestion that would meet PG&E's needs and recognize the panel's concerns?
Yeah, I was contemplating two workshops in front of the August meeting, and also we caucused at the break. We will flex our tour program to be available to educate the public and actually experience some of the lands as well. I could see us doing those two workshops at the August meeting, keep lands, and then the September meeting, we could also do lands I need emergency planning in October, but fuel could go to November, and that's not critical for the filing.
Okay. Is that any comments about Tom's suggestion? Would that meet your concerns?
I think that works. You're really saying two meetings for the land and
two meetings plus at least a couple of workshops, and that time in August and September affords us probably the opportunity to take another 200 to 300 people out to the facility to see the lands and have better informed written comments when they present to you, so that it's not the 3-minute public comment, but we redesign those two public meetings to have thoughtful presentations to the panel and to the utility that then you can question each of those people. It's almost an applicant at a normal planning hearing. We could do something like that. And I think that schedule would really give us a better informed filing at the Utilities Commission. And we don't have to vet every idea. Is it feasible or not? It's what is out there that's getting attention that might be worth further exploration.
Sherry, Dina, does that meet your...
Yeah, I'm comfortable with what Tom said.
I think I'm comfortable with it. I'm not sure about the responding to public comment part. I was envisioning that as part of a workshop versus the public meeting, but...
That was my intention for the workshop, okay. That you could have... Someone's going to present a concept. You could have further discussion to be sure you understand what's being presented, and we could then be able to synthesize those submissions.
Yeah, I'm comfortable with that.
Okay, based on Tom's... Yes, Lauren.
Tom, could you clarify, in August, is there two workshops plus the meeting, or is that what you're saying? So there'd be a total of three times that we get together during the month of August. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. And one of the concepts I mentioned briefly earlier was perhaps we look at those longer workshops that the full panel can break up some of that work and coverage so that we're not talking about you staffing 36 hours of meetings in the month of August. That seems like a tough issue. We had contemplated at our break as well.
Okay.
If we did them on a Friday, Saturday, for instance, you have some agencies that have expressed interest, like Cal Poly in repurposing. Their staff is on a Friday, but to make it easier for some of the groups that are volunteer-based, if we had a Friday, Saturday kind of meeting, then people that are working and volunteering in groups could also participate that way and not have to miss work. I would also propose that we come back with a tighter schedule and some logistics of how we support site visits, and we finalize or you guys ratify that decision either through email or at the next public meeting.
Okay. Alex?
I think that's a good proposal, and I would support that. And I also want to make sure that when we have these meetings, the members of the public that are here today, if they have suggestions as to entities, NGOs, governmental entities who could give a presentation that you think would be helpful and relevant at those workshops, please let us know. Because we will be, I think, inviting those kind of people if we can select the right ones. And if you have any, and we ought to put it on our website, too, that somehow or another communicate or invite different agencies that we think would be very helpful in understanding land use ideas that the community wants to present.
We'd be happy to help facilitate that. And the county has also offered some of its support, that with the county planning department, for instance.
Excellent.
So we'll look through that and our partner with Mr. Keith.
Thank you all. You had the opportunity to express your opinion about the proposal that Tom suggested after hearing your comments.
Actually, I have one other question. When you said spread the two meetings out to August and September, for lands, is that correct?
Correct.
So I'm wondering if all of the workshops have to be in August. As I look at my August calendar and I'm thinking about it in my head, I'm a little freaked out by that.
Yeah, we can certainly move the workshops between August and September as long as they're in front of the meeting for long enough to make a synthesized report for the report out for this panel and for you to have some time to contemplate those workshops, yes.
Okay. So we have 7 responded so far. 8? Here we go. And based on this conversation and the proposal that Tom made, we have 73 support and 27% strongly support. So it looks to me like we have a path forward. Any opposition to that at all? Great. Thank you. Thank you very much. The next thing on our panel is and to inform everybody here, what we want to do is at this meeting, we want to set the stage for the next meeting. In other words, today this is a kickoff, and we're talking about the panel process and the schedule for what we want to do. And then what are we going to do next month? So, Tom, would you want to talk about and introduce the topic that the panel will be addressing next month?
Mr. Frank's going to address that issue.
I just wanted to reflect. If you sit back and think, and this is really for the panel as well as the public, we have a rare opportunity here at Diablo Canyon. And when I mean rare, I am not familiar with any nuclear plant that shut down and went into decommissioning with this amount of time to prepare for the work. And that time provides us the opportunity to engage with the panel. So before I talk about the next topics, I want to reflect that the fact that we're able to talk about next topics, and those are still, call it 7 years before the final plant shutdown, is a tremendous opportunity for us to work through all these issues carefully and pre-plan for them and do the work, the permitting work that Tom's talked about being very important, and to lay out real good strategies that engage the community and create the best possible outcome for all the people that are affected by these decisions. So I just wanted to reflect that we may not really recognize that there's not another board that was able to get together to advise a nuclear utility owner 7 years before the decommissioning work was to happen before. So we really have a rare opportunity, and we want to take advantage of it. The next opportunity to take advantage right now is June 27th. The topic is the regulatory requirements for nuclear decommissioning cost triennial proceedings. That's a long mouthful, the nuclear decommissioning cost triennial proceedings. That's the CPUC hearings that deal with the way we receive funds for the work associated with the decommissioning activities. I think it will start the first of those conversations that Alex talked about earlier about where the money comes from and what and how it pays for what. So this is really the first opportunity. Then we have another opportunity in July a little bit to talk more about some of the details of those opportunities. So open house will start at 6 o'clock and the public meeting at 7, same as tonight. One other thing I'd like to say is, based on feedback from the panel, we intend to use this room, but not exclusively. We also are going to look for some other venues, both in North County and other areas, in order to provide people closer locations to where they live to impacted communities. So we are going to look for some of the meetings to not be in this location. So,
great. Thank you very much. Before we adjourn the meeting, we would like to have your evaluation of how this meeting went and whether we met our objectives for this meeting.
Stand by.
and see what, if you have any recommendations or suggestions about things we could change that would work better for you, and things that you liked and you want to keep the same. So just a reminder of our purpose for the meeting, initial public meeting with the panel, to introduce the panel to the community, let the community know about the mechanisms for public involvement, and have the community provide comments to you, provide an overview of the regular path ahead, and discuss future panel topics and agree on that schedule. So if you would, please go ahead and indicate on a scale from 1 to 5 how effective this meeting was in achieving the purpose and the desired outcomes that we set out at the beginning of the meeting. Okay, so the panel felt it was effective and very effective. What are some of the things we want to make sure stay in future meeting structures? What are the pluses that you liked about this meeting? Anyone want to offer?
I thought the folks were very respectful of the time of each other, and they condensed their comments, and they were right on the mark. So I appreciated that.
Great, thank you. Anyone else?
Yes. I think the open house forum, so folks can get some questions answered early on. I think that's very effective.
Okay, so the open house process and availability of all the technical experts.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would agree with Trevor that I think people found very helpful. I know I found it helpful. Also, I think just keeping on our timeline, you did a great job at keeping us on task. So that always is my hope for a meeting.
Thank you. Anything else? Yes, Lauren and then David.
I thought we got a lot of really interesting and valuable input from the public comments session. I really appreciated that. I want to make a point to go back and re-listen to this and make sure that I absorb some of the valuable info that was offered.
Great. Thank you. David?
Yeah, I also enjoyed the meeting ahead of time there. I think it gives people a better chance from the public, especially to really talk things out a little bit instead of trying to remain in that time frame of 3 minutes to make your point or have a chance to talk to the panel. I think it was important. I think it helped me, I know, being in there and chatting with people.
Okay, great. What about, what would it take to make this chart, let's say, 100% very effective? Yes, Nancy.
We did get feedback from the audience that some of the slides were difficult to read.
Okay.
The font is too small.
Right. Okay, so better, we need to really focus on making sure that it's readable and easy to understand. Yes, Frank.
Chuck, I think it would be good if you had a microphone.
I don't have one.
I don't know that the folks heard you out there very well.
Okay, so you couldn't hear me well?
Sometimes at the start of when you would talk, it was difficult to hear, and then the microphone would kick in.
Okay, so next time we'll make sure that I've got a better lav mic or it's tested better or something. Good feedback. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah, thanks. Anything else?
I appreciated the panel's willingness to challenge and to provide diverse opinions. You know, we weren't in the room agreeing with everything, and that's a bad situation if everybody immediately agrees when somebody doesn't and they don't speak up. So I just value that very much.
Kara and Alex.
I really enjoyed the open house at the beginning, but I'm also really curious about what people's opinions are after having had this meeting, and I wonder if we want to have that open house maybe after the fact sometimes, because I was wanting to know what the panel opinion is, what was effective, but it would be really interesting to know whether the people watching this were also have the same conclusion.
Well, I believe that PG&E staff is willing to stick around after this meeting if anybody has any follow-up questions or comments.
That's correct.
They are available. Technical experts, regulatory experts are available to answer your questions. Yes.
And we'll adjourn back to the poster room to do that.
Yeah. Alex and then Sherry.
The one thing I think a couple of us mentioned, and this is not the meeting itself, but I think we would maybe we could get notice out a little bit earlier of the meetings and a little more clarity. This was the first meeting, and so there was some work that we had to do. But in the future, I know we're going to try to get notice out earlier to the public.
Yeah, and things came together very quickly on this meeting, and we are preparing a set of guidelines to make sure that we get all of the announcements out early and all of the resources out as quickly as we can to the panel and to the public. So that's been recognized. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah, I've been curious about what the audience felt, what their perceptions were. And Kara mentioned one way we could tap that. But I'm wondering, too, if we could just use a simple form asking for their comments.
Okay. And that's a good reminder that we do have comment forms here. If anyone in the audience wants to make any additional comments or thought of something after the public comment period, please fill out those forms and give them to us before you leave, and we'll put those in the process, and we'll make sure that the panel sees those.
Thank you. Yes. Question for you guys. Can they online on our panel website, is there a place to for them to comment as well, provide feedback?
Yeah, there's online feedback available today.
So just to get to that point.
All right. Anyone else? Well, with that, I want to thank the panel, and I want to thank everyone here in attendance for participating and making the time to come to this meeting. And let's consider the first public meeting of the engagement panel adjourned.
Slide.